As we start the new year, there's a sense of unease because of the mortgage meltdown of last year and its continued drag on the economy. I'm Ted Asfergadu, and this is In Focus, a public affairs feature on KKIQ and Diablo Valley 92.1. My guest this morning is Sean Olander. He's an attorney in San Mateo who authored an opinion piece that was in the San Francisco Chronicle that appeared in early December of last year about what is called the mortgage meltdown. Good morning, Sean, and thanks for being on the program.
Good morning, Ted.
The central point of your article seems to be that large-scale fraud occurred in U.S. banks regarding the way in which mortgages were packaged as securities and sold to investors. Now, that process is legal, but what you allege in your opinion piece is that there were illegalities going on in this process. Can you explain?
The circumstantial evidence to me is the volume of loans and money passing between these various entities that claim that they weren't communicating certain facts between each other. And the fundamental pairings that I see where this type of fraud very likely occurred is first between originating banks and appraisal firms or appraisers. And I think there's already been some evidence of that unearthed by Andrew Cuomo, the Attorney General of New York, who uncovered through subpoenas that senior management at Washington Mutual Bank was pressuring a company called eAppraisal IT to come up with inflated appraisals to allow them to close these deals. And the key to stimulating the market we've had over the past four years or so was to qualify borrowers with insufficient income to possibly where they couldn't possibly pay back the debt, to qualify them for loans that could be securitized because the value of the loan was sufficiently less than the value of the property. And so the way you could look at this and say that everyone in the process, from the originating bank to the appraiser to the investment bank that securitized the loans, they all had an interest in a fraudulent appraisal because they couldn't securitize and sell those loans otherwise.
Okay. So it happened at looking at the value of property to begin with. So appraising.
That's one part. Yeah.
Okay, that's one part that you allege is illegal, that they inflated the price of the properties so they could get people to qualify for loans who wouldn't normally qualify. But you're saying that this whole process of appraising a property was fraudulent because the numbers were cooked. They were sort of made up and say, oh, yeah, well, this is worth, you know, X number of dollars more than the market value really is.
That's right. Well, I think it's called the California Association of Appraisers. I forgot their title, but it's the Professional Association for Appraisers. They came out with a study this year that said that 90% of appraisers said that they were regularly pressured to inflate appraisals. What a lot of people are trying to say, what I feel like the media has been saying and the government's been saying and investment banks have been saying, is that this was happening on an ad hoc basis. You had independent mortgage brokers and independent real estate agents, and there was an interest to sell the product and get people qualified for loans. And so, sure, this fraud was going on, but no, it wasn't a concerted sort of thing that senior management at banks knew about.
Right.
It was this thing that was just sort of going on. The excuse is always, well, we had no idea that it was this serious. But they do. Just to bring this to the next fraud pairing, their originating banks and the appraisal firms. And then on the other side, there are investment banks that bundle these securities and the bond rating agencies. The investment banks that package these securities have to get them rated by the bond rating agencies to be able to sell them to investors. And the higher the rating that the bond rating agency gives the securities, the higher the price that they will sell for. And there are some types of institutional investors like pension funds and insurance companies that have special rules about the minimum rating of investment bonds they can buy. And so it's crucial for the investment banks to make hundreds of billions of dollars in profit on this that they get sufficiently high ratings. It's not like they bundle up these loans and then send them off to the bond rating agency, and the bond rating agency sends them a letter that says, these bonds are rated AA, and this tranche is rated A, and this tranche is rated AAA. Thanks for your business. You know, that's not how it works. They work directly with these people. And the bond rating agency will tell them, we could rate this higher if these these factors changed. You know, if you could get us loans, if you could package this in a different way or change the composition of the loans in this particular way, we could justify a higher rating, and we'll give you a higher rating. And so to what extent, I'm wondering, were investment banks working with bond rating agencies to find out what kind of information they wanted?
So they could tailor it, right?
Tailor that information. And how did the investment banks communicate that to originating banks? And how did the originating banks communicate that to independent brokers?
Well, it seems like what's going on is that, one, there's a lot of inflating of prices, bond ratings, all of this to generate a lot of enthusiasm about buying these securities. Secondly, what I see going on is there is regulation within this part of the market. However, if you have investment bankers coming to talk to mortgage brokers and saying, here's how you can get people to qualify, they're looking at the law and they're saying, how can we skirt some of the regulations here and essentially get what we want? So there's always this...
Well, they weren't investment bankers. I mean, they were people, they were from originating banks.
Oh, originating banks. And we'll get into the difference between the two, an investment bank and an originating bank. In fact, I've got a question that addresses that specifically. But what you're finding out from the originating bank is, or what's happening with the originating bank is that they are looking at ways in which whatever regulations are in place that you can kind of get around. If it's illegal, that would be the province of Congress to investigate with an arm of the, I would presume, the Treasury Department or any kind of agency that has subpoena power to look at records. But from what you're saying, there seems to be a lot of shredding going on of documents, so there may not be much of a paper trail.
My guess, you know, and again, I can't know because I don't have subpoena power. But my guess is that there is so much evidence out there that they don't make that many shredders. Like, there's no way you could get, I mean, this was such a big business for so long. There's no way you could get rid of that much evidence. I mean, I was in a cafe in San Mateo in March of this year, and there was a mortgage broker in there telling her clients in the middle of the cafe, no, you have to write down that you make more than that. And I walked over and I actually confronted this woman in front of her clients in the middle of a cafe in downtown San Mateo and got into an argument with her, like a pretty loud argument, right in the middle of the cafe. And she started laughing, telling me, you don't know what you're talking about. Everybody knows that people are writing down they make more than they actually do. What do you think the purpose of these loans is? Like, why have a stated income loan if you were going to write down what you actually made? Mm-hmm. She's like, you have no idea how this works, and it's perfectly legal. It's felony fraud to make a misrepresentation on a loan application.
This is In Focus. I'm Ted Asfergadu, and my guest is Sean Olender, and we're talking about the mortgage market and some of the issues he raised in an early December opinion piece in the San Francisco Chronicle. Sean, you say that the Treasury Department created a scheme in private that on the surface, it looks like they're protecting homeowners from having their homes go into foreclosure. But you say it's more about protecting financial interests from criminal liability. So how is that the case?
I did write that article before the final plan came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan that did come out, a bit smaller than I expected it to be. It's
okay.
Going to affect a little bit fewer people than
What you said in your opinion piece is one thing, but then when this plan was finalized, now you're saying, what are some of the things that you are not necessarily backpedaling, but you are going to revise some of your statements?
It's a little bit, the plan's less far-reaching, and that doesn't mean that the intention wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing in these private meetings that the press can't go to and the public can't go to is they're kind of horse trading between people who allegedly represent bond investors, originating banks, investment banks, and they're trying to get them all to agree to something that will put this off a while.
Once the loans are refinanced into Fannie Mae, that amounts to a bailout.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, even FHA insurance, because what you're doing is you're saying, okay, we're going to put a backstop against bondholder losses using taxpayer money. And so what's the point of suing an investment bank for misrepresenting bonds?
So it's not only a bailout, but it's kind of a get out of jail free card for those who may have been involved in some kind of fraud.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if you can make the losses go away, who's going to pressure anybody to investigate this? The thing that I find really peculiar is that it seems like people who are bearing these losses aren't suing anybody.
And the reason being is because if some of the evidence, I would imagine, comes to light in the court, then you're going to see maybe some of the people who bring the initial suit, maybe some of their friends might be implicated in the lawsuit as well.
It's possible.
I mean, this is all speculation at this point, because we don't know essentially the nuts and bolts of a lot of what's going on, because some of it's done in private.
Well, I have no idea what they're doing. I mean, why don't they sue somebody? If they bought AAA rated bonds from an investment bank and they've turned out to be completely worthless, the investment bank was working with a bond rating agency and working with an originating bank. How's about we spend a little bit of money to try to get back a lot of money?
Well, we'll see what happens within the next few months. Maybe that will be the case. I have one more question, and unfortunately we're sort of hitting our time wall, but it's a bit of a loaded question, so hopefully you could be somewhat brief, but also somewhat detailed. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
Okay, one of your critics, Felix Salmon from CondéNastPortfolio.com, he really takes you to task for the piece. At issue is his contention that you don't make the distinction between originating banks and investment banks. So the distinction between originators and investment banks, and that in your article you lump investment banks as a liable party in fraud. Felix says that they are essentially innocent because they're middlemen who aren't subject to the laws that govern originating banks. So first off, what is an originating bank and what is an investment bank? What's the distinction between that? And is he correct, is Felix correct in saying that the laws that govern originating banks are not the same kind of laws that apply to investment banks?
Okay, the first part of the question, there is a big difference between an originating bank and an investment bank. The originating bank is like Wells Fargo or Washington Mutual, who makes the loan to the borrower, Countrywide Bank. They give the money to the borrower, and in exchange for the money, they get a trust deed and a note, a loan, you know, a promise to repay, a promissory note.
Okay.
The investment bank are people like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bear Stearns. They package and administer the process of selling securities. Those are bonds. The originating bank sells these loans to the investment bank, or sometimes engages the investment bank as a partner in making a deal where the pool of these loans, thousands of them, are put together into a fund and separated into what they call tranches based on risk. And bond rating agencies then rate the quality of those bonds on a kind of standardized scale.
Yeah, like I think on in the paper, AAA, AA, BBB, and BB, and so forth.
Right.
Okay.
And now those ratings are crucial to how much you can sell the bonds for and who's allowed to buy them. Felix is partially right. And what he's right about is that originating banks oftentimes have a contractual responsibility to buy back loans if they default before a certain time.
Okay.
Okay. But what I'm talking about is securities fraud.
Which is different from what Felix thinks that you're talking about.
Yeah, this is not a contract. Right? It's like if you rob a bank, you can get in a lot of trouble and have to give the money back even if you don't have a contract with the bank, right? You know, because you've violated a criminal statute. And here I'm talking about civil fraud suits for securities fraud, and I'm talking about criminal violations that are not based in contract at all. There are laws that prohibit the fraudulent marketing of securities, you know, the misrepresentation. Yeah,
from what I'm hearing is that there is enough circumstantial evidence to prosecute.
You know, based on enough circumstantial evidence to make this the number one priority of the Justice Department to investigate. I don't know that there's enough circumstantial evidence to prosecute, but looking at the consequences of this and looking at, you know, the kind of money that's passing between these entities,
then it certainly warrants investigation.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of anything else right now in the United States that warrants this kind of attention.
All right, Sean, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being on the program this morning.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and that's In Focus for another week. I'm KKIQ's and Diablo Valley 92.1's Public Affairs Director, Ted Asfergadu. Thank you for joining me.